Joining us now from the Golf Channel, he does a lot of their travel and all kinds of good stuff like that and things about golf courses. Matt Janella joins us. Matt, welcome into the Golf Shop.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Man, we're doing good. What's going on with you these days?
Traveling.
Now, isn't that work?
Yes. So-called, you know, quote, work. Yeah, it's... a life on the road, seeing and playing golf courses.
Yeah, you could tell us how terrible that is, but we're not going to believe you. So so tell us where you're off to. Just give our listeners a sense of where you're going in the next, say, month and a half.
This is the fun stretch. Actually, this is a little more coming into that personal time through the holidays. But I'm going to a buddy's trip. I got invited to Sage Valley with a couple friends. I'm going to spend a couple days near Augusta, Georgia. Private golf, which is a little different for me. Most of everything I do is public accessible, so that's going to be a treat. And then off to Hawaii to visit my brother on the north shore of Oahu and probably play Turtle Bay Resort out there a couple times. And then I go to Napa and then San Francisco, then back to Orlando.
Ooh, that's interesting. I actually just booked a vacation next October for Hawaii, staying on Oahu. So you'll have to give me some lowdown, man.
I've been fortunate to get there for the last 13 or 14 years to see my brother who lives on the North Shore, and he's raising, you know, three kids out there. So it's an opportunity to kind of hunker down into the great Hawaiian lifestyle and recharge the batteries for next year.
Yeah, well, I just booked a vacation to Boston in December, so you two can shut up.
We're officially four up.
Yes. And it's early. It's early. We'll see if we can maintain that lead. All right, Matt. So as we get into these winter months and the cold weather, I guess at some point it's going to settle in. It really hasn't started kicking its ugly head in yet so far. Where should we migrate to go play? I mean, we all know Florida and places like that, but are there some hidden gems out there that we should go find?
I mean, you know, obviously Florida and Arizona are very popular for obvious reasons right now. And, you know, I'm not a desert golf fan per se. I don't like when I'm rooting around. You know, I'm not good enough to not be rooting around in the cacti. I mean, it's hard enough to find a golf ball, let alone try to find it in the desert. So I've been moved down to Florida about 3 years ago from the Northeast, and I've actually toured quite a few of the properties in and around Florida. And I will say there's been millions and millions and millions of dollars invested into what feels like a Florida upgrade in terms of options. A lot of these destinations are not new, with the exception of maybe Stream Song, which is kind of the middle of nowhere Florida. But I think, you know, Amelia Island and South Walton, I've actually really pleasantly surprised with what's going on in South Walton. Really good value. It's kind of a buyer's market right now in the world of golf, and you know, as far south as you can go, the better the weather's going to get, obviously.
Well, I mean, you've obviously been cataloging the best public courses in the United States, and let's take the weather out of it. Are there places that we don't think of as traditional golf hotbeds that maybe we should visit because they're both beautiful with great courses and affordable?
Yeah, if you take the weather out of it, and I talk about this a lot, say a place like Brainerd, Minnesota.
What?
Yeah, I know. The Maddens on Gull Lake is this little hidden gem in the world of golf. It's a multi-course facility with kind of one championship course. You know, that's the championship course in peak season on the weekend. You might pay $110 to play it, and it is a fantastic golf course. Yeah, I just released my top 50, which you can find the complete list and criteria on golfadvisor.com. But the Classic at Maddens on Gull Lake ranks number 34 in the country. I really like a lot of golf in northern Michigan. Forest Dunes is a golf course in Roscommon, Michigan. Not exactly easy to get to. You fly into Traverse City and drive about an hour and a half, almost 2 hours, and you feel like you're lost about three times, and then you stumble upon this fantastic clubhouse. They've added lodging. They are now adding a second golf course by Tom Doak. The first course is done by Tom Weisskopf. Weisskopf himself says it's probably his best effort of his golf course portfolio. and the golf course being added by Tom Doak will open for preview play next summer. It's 18 holes that can be played in two different directions. If you know anything about Tom Doak, he's a very cerebral guy, a deep thinker, a big fan of classic architecture. He's had this idea for about 20 or 30 years kicking around in his head, and he finally found the owner willing to take the chance on it. The fact that it's the second course and second and third course on property took a little pressure off him to kind of have some fun or think out of the box on a concept like this. That will actually a feature on that will air this week on Morning Drive. Which I'm pretty excited that it's a concept that's being executed, and I'm excited to really play it next summer in both directions. So, you know, like I keep saying, I think that the golf consumer is winning right now. I think prices are coming down. Golf courses are being tweaked to be made into a little more user-friendly, and accessibility continues to go up.
So when you're looking at compiling a list like this, I mean, you obviously have to look at public courses differently than private courses, and the amenities are different. When you're compiling a list, what are the important factors that make a public course special, where people are generally showing up, playing, and leaving?
Yeah, I mean, I have a criteria. You know, fun factor, walkability, prestige, you know. As I say, if you're going to have a softball game, would you rather play a softball game at Wrigley Field, or would you rather play down street at the local park? Of course, you'd rather play at Wrigley Field. So because it's Wrigley Field, because it's where the pros play, you know, so the prestige does weigh into kind of determining a golf course, because we all want to kind of play where the pros play or hit shots that the pros have played, where history has been made. I think that a lot of golf over the years, especially in America, got away from some of the kind of the key elements to getting us to want to come back. And that's, you know, private golf can't afford to build a golf course. Private facilities can't afford to build a golf course that no one wants to play over and over again, because then the whole business model goes away, right? Well, why does public golf have to be so much different than that? I do get that the occasional resort course built on a crazy piece of property can be a little more dramatic, and that's what Pete Dye has told me many times, is that I'll build a resort course knowing that somebody's probably only going to play it once or twice. I get a lot more leeway to be dramatic and a little less forgiving at a resort course than I do at a private golf facility. But I think too many people went down that road with thoughtless architecture. I think routing is a key thing. You know, would the 17th at Sawgrass be as memorable of a hole if it was the third hole on the golf course? You know, I think the fact that that happens late in the round is the reason why that hole is so memorable and popular and intricate into the fabric of what is golf in America. Little things like that, you know, just the general sense of when you putt out on 18, do you want to go right back out to the first tee, or do you want to get out of there as fast as possible and complain to all your friends about how much you spent and can't believe how many balls you lost? I think the future of golf in America is getting much more over leaning back towards what is fun, and I think that's a good thing.
Again, we're speaking with Matt Ginella from the Golf Channel, and you know, that's kind of where I was going to go with you from an architecture standpoint. Is there anything that you're seeing? Is there anything in design that's going to help speed up play? I mean, we always talk about, and Mike and I talk about on the show, I mean, I always say, if you want to speed up play, the first thing that you have to do is where you have trees or woods, for that matter, is go in and clean them out and give the player an opportunity to A, find their ball, and B, have a shot out. Is there anything that you're seeing that might help speed up play as design goes on?
Well, that's certainly one of them. You know, cutting down the rough areas, less forced carries, lower the green speeds is a big increase green sizes, fill in bunkers where it's not necessarily necessary. It's not only just speed of play, it's also just general sustainability. A couple weeks ago on Morning Drive, we dedicated an entire week to what we called Water Week. You know, there's like half of the country is not necessarily in a state of drought, but is experiencing abnormally dry conditions with six states, obviously mostly on the West Coast, that are in legitimate stages of drought. And with water costs going up and general maintenance costs going up, that sends green fees up, fees, monthly fees for your private membership goes up, and it pushes people away from the game of golf. All of this is kind of part of what we need to do to kind of fix almost three decades of mistakes, in my opinion. Real thoughtless architects. A lot of people were getting hired to build golf courses because they won major championships, because they're big names, because they're wildly popular by the people who are paying them to build golf. And yet golf course architecture was like their second, third, or fourth business entity. Bill Corr and Ben Crenshaw, who are building about 30 golf courses in 30 years, spend almost the entire time out on a golf course, especially Bill Corr, sort of making sure that this golf course makes sense. That is their primary source of income. Gil Hance, his primary source of income is building golf courses. Tom Doak, these are the guys, these minimalist architects who are sort of percolating to the top and are remaining busy building new golf courses, while the others are sort of scraping and clawing to find projects overseas or projects in which they're actually fixing their mistakes or being hired to fix other people's mistakes.
Yeah, so does that mean that we're going to start seeing more U.S. Open of late, like, the Pinehurst redesign and the U.S. Open last year, being on golf courses where they're not as green as we maybe saw 10 years ago? Do we need an adjustment period for everybody to say, you know what, brown is beautiful sometimes?
Well, that's just it. Sometimes I think that is the case. I think we just need to, when you go to the U.K. and you play these golf courses, the look or the color of the golf course is directly related to the weather. if it's raining a lot, you're going to get a green golf course. If it's not raining a lot, it's going to be brown. And yet the golf course is still very playable. I think that's probably more along the lines of what we're going to see here in America. It's because why? Because it makes sense. It doesn't make sense to keep growing and watering and mowing rough. That's an area where you shouldn't be concerned about if you're a golf course operator or a superintendent. You should be worried. Centerline irrigation is what they went back to at Pinehurst number two, and the greens were watered during the men's open because they had to, because the women's open was coming the following week. One big mistake they made at Chambers Bay, in my opinion, USGA, that is you can let the fairways go hard and fast, but you got to water the greens. I think they did Chambers Bay an incredible disservice by presenting that golf course the way they did, considering I was there 2 weeks before and it was absolutely immaculate. Greens were pristine and very lush and green, and they just stopped watering. And I think you can get away with that if you're hosting a U.S. Open at Oakmont or another private Olympic club, another private golf facility, because after everybody leaves, well, the private membership is already built in and nobody's going to defect because it wasn't presented in a proper way. But I think that they did a disservice to a public golf course by presenting it that way, because that's going to directly affect the amount of business or people that come to this golf course, when in reality, that's really not fair to what Chambers Bay is on a day-to-day basis. Kind of a long-winded answer to your question, but it's all evolving. It's all changing very, very rapidly, in my opinion.
Well, Matt, man, we're up against it, so we're going to have to let you go. But, we appreciate you coming on with us tonight.
I really appreciate the opportunity, guys. Pleasure chatting with you.
All right, and you get back to that tough job of yours.
Yeah.
Listen to me. I've never worked a day in my life, and at one point I stopped asking why me and decided why not me.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
What the heck? Good stuff, man. Well, we look forward to hearing more from you soon.
Take care, guys.
All right, thanks a lot.